This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I know we had a couple of goodies mixed in there in the last couple of weeks that we had either recorded or things that we wanted to talk about with news and notes to try to keep you all entertained, keep the listeners listening. And we're kind of back into our mold as we talk about the 2021-22 season. It's actually the Diamond season, the 75th anniversary for the NBA. I'm going to introduce Adam Murray now. Hi, Adam Murray, co-host.
We are back for a seventh season now. Hard to believe.
It's not our 75th season, like the NBA, those old geezers.
Oh, sometimes it feels that way doing this.
I do feel 75 sometimes. Like, I have my forgetful moments. Let me ask you this, because the last one that they really went outward to celebrate was the 50th anniversary. That was in 1997. Were you in high school then?
Yeah, I was in high school. What was I, 750 then? No, of course. Yes, I was in.
I don't know, Adam. I don't know how old you are. I've known you for 7 years, but I don't know how old you are. I was a sophomore in high school. I remember it because, and especially the, like, the people who love the throwback jerseys, who really like the authentic ones, know that had the gold logo for the NBA on the jersey. So when you see that logo, you know that was the 97 season, because that was the NBA's 50th year anniversary. They also had the 50 greatest players, which they're going to replicate for 75 greatest players in the same place where they did the NBA 50 All-Star game, which was in Cleveland. They're going to do it again with and add 25 more players. We'll talk about that another day. But it's kind of fun to see the Diamond anniversary of the NBA, you know, just to see him kind of do some callbacks. The only thing that was weird, though, Adam, is that they want to do the first ever NBA game as like a throwback classic. And it's the Raptors and the Knicks, because the Toronto Huskies and the New York Knicks were the first NBA game ever on record. Is that kind of weird?
Not really. What were they supposed to be? The L.A. and, you know, L.A. and the other L.A. team?
I mean, it's almost like the New York Buccaneers. Like, if you ever see the Pelicans play, sometimes they wear their throwbacks and it's the Buccaneers, because they had an ABA team called the New Orleans Buccaneers. Larry Brown played on that team, of all people. And it's like, yeah, but is it really? You know, it's because the New Orleans had the Jazz, too. So it's just... I guess regionally it makes sense. The only three teams that are remaining from that very first season was the Knicks, the Celtics, and the Golden State Warriors. But we are not talking about any of those three teams right now, are we?
No, we are. This is the entry level. This is the start of the season. So we're taking teams. Welcome, you know, the NBA. This is where you start. This is teams who will make the new expanded playoff play-in range. So, you know, teams here, this is sort of the definition of just the average.
The ground floor.
Here we are, the big NBA building.
Is the lobby the part of the ground floor?
This is the lobby.
So you're literally got your suitcases in here and you're like, welcome back. Get ready for the season.
Welcome back. Get ready for the season. We're expecting you to, you know,
you got work to do.
You should be enough to make the playoffs. You should be enough to be a decent team. Get in for the long haul.
You know, if you don't have your room booked, sleeping in the lobby is not a terrible idea. It is kind of comfy out there.
If you're homeless,
you just find a couch, you put your earbuds. I mean, look, it's 2021. You could put in your earbuds, listen to your ebook or whatever, watch some movie on your phone, and fall asleep right there. I can do it. Just give me some eye patch. Or, you know what, if you're wearing a mask, just put the mask over your eyes.
Oh, let's get to the previews.
Okay. So we're going to be just going – We're not going to really have a particular order by the different teams that we clustered in. So we're just going to hit up the first one that we thought about when we talked about these. And we were both in agreement on this. I don't think this is one where we were sort of discussing, I don't like this team in this level or that level. You and I were both pretty much in solid agreement on all of them this time. Doesn't always happen, but it was definitely the case this time. The first one we're going to talk about out of the West, we're going to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies. last year, 38-33, got in through the play-in tournament where they beat, I think it was San Antonio and Golden State. Then they lost to the Jazz. Here's the funny thing. Even though they're really, really young and they stayed young after their transactions, a lot of movement and a little bit of overfill on their roster.
Well, the problem with Memphis was, as you know, if you listen to the expansion draft, they have too many young people under contract. And they just have a whole glut of...
Period.
Yeah, so they had to sort of thin the herd, which they did this year. The only question is, did they really do enough? I don't really know what they did, because it all started with that big trade to ship out Jonas Valanciunas and bringing back Stephen
Eric
Adams.
Eric Bledsoe and Stephen Adams. But what happened is, I know this is, people are going to be cross-eyed by the end of this one. Bledsoe goes to Memphis, but then he immediately gets traded about a month later to the Clippers for Patrick Beverley. Beverly gets flipped to Minnesota for Juan Hernan Gomez. Then Hernan Gomez gets flipped to Boston for Chris Dunn and Carson Edwards. So it gets a little complicated. I didn't even mention Marc Gasol, who they took on just to buy him out from the Lakers. So I get what you're trying to say, is that they did a whole ton of moving and stuff. But at the end game, the roster didn't really change that much. You know, you got Ja Morant as the star. Jaren Jackson Jr. is there, even though he's got an extension coming up. Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark. It's pretty much the same team, but they do have a lot, like you said, a lot of guys on the back end that they either have baked into the guaranteed deals, or they really, really like and they don't want to give up on, like Desmond Bane and Xavier Tillman and Tyus Jones is on his last year. So they weren't able to really move too many pieces other than really Valanciunas and then cutting Justice Winslow.
Well, that's the thing was, just like we mentioned, just a lot of, you know, you added Jarrett Culver as, you know, sort of a reclamation project. Let's just buy low, see what he can do, an expiring deal. You like Desmond Bane. You said Zaire Tillman. Yeah, you draft Jair Williams. And
he looked okay in summer league, but he played at Stanford, which I mean, this is not the college basketball podcast, but Stanford didn't even play a home game until like the last 2 weeks of the season. So,
well, and last season was just an anomaly anyway. So you had, you know, teams who flat out didn't play, teams who played half seasons, teams
but
like
Williams
Duke, who
did play.
Gave up.
He just wasn't on a national spotlight.
Well, yeah. So, and then, like you said, you have Williams, who they're high because they drafted him, I believe, 10th or 11th. You have Desmond Bane, but you have Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson ahead of them. You draft this project in Santiago Aldama, which was just a mystery of like, why is he there and why is he going to be on the roster? And but at the same, okay, it's Jaws' team. You now add a Stephen Adams, who will now change a diet because he's a different player than Valanciunas.
I'll say this for Adams. Defensively, he had some good moments in the early going with the Pelicans. Then the defense started to kind of fall off. That's where Adams can give you some problems, because if your defense is not improving while he's on the lineup or in the lineup, offensively, he's not going to be this like force for you. So what is he providing? You know, Jonas Valanciunas is like kind of like the opposite of Adams. He's not good defensively, but he gets double doubles and he'll average 18 a game.
He can rebound. He can shoot threes. He can pop out. He can space the floor a little bit. Stephen Adams is just I'm sitting in the middle. You're not moving me. I'm not moving.
But he's good at it, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. You have Brandon Clark, who is good six man material. Mm-hmm. Jackson is back from his injury, which really, I think the season hinges on his health, because
if his three-point shot is good, I think he can be really effective.
Outside of him, they are just dangerously thin at the bigs now. Mm-hmm. There is no depth there. And you just sort of have this big glut of wings with Brooks, Bane, Melton, Chris Dunn, Kyle Anderson, Williams, Culver. Like, that's a lot of people just sitting on the wings. So I don't know what they're – you made all these moves, but I don't know if any of them are really did do anything.
I forgot to mention Culver, who got flipped in one of those Bledsoe Beverly crazy things. Do you think that they could get something out of Culver at the guard spot?
It wouldn't hurt to try, because, you know, it's his last year of the deal. So he's expired. You could just cut him. There's no, you know, you don't have a 3-year deal with him. So, you know, give him a shot. He's a 6th round pick for a reason. So He was getting nothing in Minnesota. He was out of the rotation just completely. So there's no harm, no foul.
We're going on general over-unders for the wins. The over-under is around 40.5. That's actually a little worse than last season. And that was a team that had to scratch and claw just to make the playoffs. Adam, I think this team is going to make the playoffs, so I'll go over on that one. Would you?
Well, this is why we're at the ground floor. These are teams that are expected because, once we start getting into the base,
and what Vegas is saying.
The Vegas has them, like you said, 40.5. That's kind of where they should be, 41, 42 wins, maybe.
Yeah, 500. About like what happens at the tank in tank time at the end.
They're within the margin of error. So that's the, I guess I will have to go just slightly under because the West is, although it's not as good anymore, the heavy hitters. So they should get pretty beaten up on because,
a lot of talk was about the East and the arms race there. But yeah, the West didn't necessarily get worse.
The West got Golden State back. Mm-hmm. They didn't have them last year. So it's one of those, these guys have overachieved this point and they're going to keep, there was no reason not to overachieve. It's just, this roster seems like it has a hard ceiling on it.
Yeah. Just one observation and two quick questions. The observation for me is that despite the movement even though the roster didn't change on paper, they're still a really young team. And they just, I don't know if adding Adams might be a big help for them because he did have experience on playoff teams in Oklahoma City. But I just wonder if maybe they just need to add one more veteran just to give them something. The other two questions, one small, one big. The small one, Grayson Allen started some games. He got traded to, where did he get traded to? I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank here.
Was it the Clippers?
Milwaukee,
yes.
Do you think they'll miss him?
Yes, they will miss him again because he was that gritty, the gritty bench guy to give rest.
He also makes big plays down the stretch.
He wasn't the player I think they expected him to be when they drafted him, I think 13th or 12th.
Okay.
But he was a solid backup, and he's a solid veteran addition to the Bucks right now.
And the last one, will Ja Morant make the All-Star team this year?
I think he will.
Okay.
I think he will get in this year.
I see him in the mode like Trae Young in Atlanta. He made the All-Star game in 2020, but he missed in 21, I believe. Like, Trae Young now is perennial. Like, if he doesn't make the All-Star team, something went wrong.
Well, like, he'd had a bad year is why he wouldn't make it.
Yeah, well, that's true. He kind of surged on at the end. But for me, with Morant, he's so good. Like, once you have that third year, I mean, that was Derrick Rose's MVP season, and a lot of people have compared him to Derrick Rose. I'm not saying Ja Morant's going to be MVP. If it does happen, you heard it here first. But, I can see him really soaring. I mean, his averages were around, 20, 23 points. I can see him going up to 26, something like that. Let's move on to the Indiana Pacers out in the Eastern Conference. For this one, the changes were kind of minimal, and we had talked about this before about how they have a bit of a logjam up top with their salaries. With their star players, obviously, are Domantas Sabonis, an all-star, a really good player, even though defensively he struggles. Malcolm Brogdon, good two-way player. Miles Turner, great defensive center, but that's really all he is. But he makes $18 million a year. T.J. Warren, and then there's Caris LeVert, who they got in that James Harden, Oladipo, crazy four-way trade. After that, you didn't really have a lot of room. So the only real addition they had was one of the very first moves in free agency was Torrey Craig. And they re-signed TJ McConnell, which I thought was smart because I think that they were pretty thin at the backcourt position outside of Brogdon. And Edmund Sumner is also out for the year.
Well, TJ Warren was out with a foot injury last year, and I think they really changed him. And
now this year.
Yep. So the problem with this team is they are just the definition of the average team, the complete unexciting, we like Brogdon. Yeah. We like LeVert. Yeah. We like Sabonis. Turner. The only one people who apparently doesn't like Miles Turner is Indiana, because everyone seems to have a higher opinion of him than the Pacers.
He does average over 3 blocks a game, which led the league. So, I mean, that is a really, it's just like DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond when they were really on a roll with the rebounding. Like, those numbers look fantastic, but what does it provide to the team? you know, that's when you start to question the value. But in a vacuum, when you look at that number, you're like, wow, that's a great player.
Yeah, no, Miles Turner was the, you know, the reason Danny Ainge, that was the beginning of the end for him, because why trade for Turner, who Celtics fans all wanted, when you could get an exemption? Well, with the, you know, we could imagine all the things we could get with all that money. Oh yeah, you got lots of nothing. But like I said, this team is just painfully, like, you know, for first of all, just to define how this team is, and even like Vegas, you know, the over under on them is 41 and a half games. So it's just like literally even there, like,
if you look, and also just to make it clear, there were only 72 games in the regular season. So we're going by kind of percentages. In projection, Indiana would have had 39 wins if it were an 82 game season last year. So that's actually a little better. I guess maybe it's the Carlisle bump, because Rick Carlisle is now the head coach there.
And that's the only thing, like, I made a specific note of that was the teams all overachieve. All his Dallas teams, because of him. He is a great coach.
The Rondo one didn't in 2015. That was the only one that kind of like belly flopped.
That completely backfired, but that he didn't trade for him. So
right.
But the teams as a whole all buy into the team concept. They all, I mean, you just look at those Dallas rosters, like, well, those players aren't good. And like you see that we even mentioned last year, they're bringing their whole team back, because the only people they lost were Holiday and McDermott. Your you know, your boy Dougie Buckets.
Dougie McBuckets, yeah.
Who just never did anything. So they didn't
And they broke up the Holidays. Hopefully Justin comes back, bounces back from Aaron being gone.
So they didn't really lose any of their rotation. Like,
yeah, but they were already thin at the front court already. Like, the problem for them, and this showed up in the play-in, I think Turner didn't play in the play-in. He was not healthy enough. And that hurt him, because even though Goga Badazi is not terrible, he's not a starting center in the NBA.
He's not starting.
And that's why they drafted Isaiah Jackson. So, but I they can't – my fear for them is that you can't afford to lose Sabonis or Turner for long periods of time.
Oh, no, losing them are done, but – if you just look at the backcourt, Brogdon, McConnell is the backup. LeVert, Jeremy Lamb is a backup. TJ Warren, Torrey Craig's a backup. That's a solid, you can move pieces in and out. You can rest some guys from it. That's a solid, like.
Yeah, and there might be some forgetfulness about Warren, because he was out for pretty much the entire season with a broken foot. He was awesome in the bubble. Like, he exploded. So when it comes to, like, scoring, Warren is your guy. He can really help out. You know, I'm not saying they should do this, but maybe they can try Warren out as a six man, like a microwave type score.
Just be the
ease him in. Ease him in, right.
But, you know, the thing, Carlisle does know how to work with very thin rosters and very little depth. And, I mean, having to use Boban for all those years.
Yeah, so Dallas got a different problem, right?
I almost want to say, you know, my big question for them, given the benefit of that, well, are they perhaps a little sleeper team?
Well, they're not going to be expected to do any better than they already have. The other thing too is that they're bringing in, not only are they bringing in Carlisle, like, Carlisle's bringing in his mentality, which is more of like, I guess he does like balance, but offensively is really where he got his start as a coach. And so I can see the offense sort of being a little faster. Like, they were good in points per game, but their defense really struggled. So I could see more balance there.
Like, would you be surprised if they like a seven seed?
I would actually be surprised. Like, I could actually see them sort of in that play-in scenario. Like,
yeah, they're the...
You had mentioned 39. Like, they had projected at 39 last year, and this year it's around 41 and a half, give or take. I can see that number. You know, that's a good line by Vegas. Like, I can kind of see it going over or under. I'll probably go under, though, because of the East getting a little better.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and move on to back to the Western Conference, and we'll go to the Minnesota Timberwolves. God, it feels like we pick on these guys, but we don't try.
We don't pick on them. They pick on themselves, and they are just the
you are such a victim punchline. You are such a fucking victim blamer, Adam. You're going to have to get canceled.
Every year it is this is the year they're going to turn it around, right? This is the year they're going to turn around, and we wait every year for them to do something. And this is the year, like, they're going to put it together, right? You can't keep having top five picks year in, year out, and then still be this terrible. And I'm like, okay, well, you have Towns, who is he? He's, in theory, he should be an all-star. Well, okay, then you trade for Russell, who should be good. And then you just every year, they're just the same terrible team.
So it was two waves of changes. The first wave was simple, but it was a big one. So we've talked over and over again in previous shows about how they were in sort of a salary crunch because they had years attached to the guys that they had in there, like even Ricky Rubio and who they signed in 2020. And it was like, well, if you can't move these players, what do? You change the coach and you shake up the front office. So, you know, Gershon Rosas comes in. Then he finally, well, not finally, I don't want to say Ryan Saunders was the worst coach ever, but I think Rosas wanted to get rid of him and he was just looking for the excuse. So he gets rid of Saunders. And then he brings in Chris Finch almost immediately, who had been coaching at Toronto. So clearly he wanted him from the beginning. They struggle still, 23-49. They didn't even get their draft pick because in the D'Angelo Russell trade, which you had mentioned, they gave it up to the Warriors. So no big addition this time. Anthony Edwards, their number one pick in 2020, he turned out really well. But the second wave of changes was in the offseason where they were able to make trades in order to kind of shake up the roster. So Hernan Gomez, Jared Culver, who was their 2019 lottery pick, Rubio got dealt to Cleveland, I think. Am I right about that?
Yep.
And then they re-signed Jared Vanderbilt. And then through some machinations of trades, they bring in Torian Prince, who's in his last year, and Patrick Beverley. We talked about this privately, and I actually agree with you. Even though Beverly has struggled as a one-on-one defender, which is his reputation, he really started to sag in quality of defensive play in the last year or two with the Clippers. I think he is an upgrade at the guard spot for Minnesota.
Beverly, yeah, it's really sad how you changed, and he's like, what, 32 now? You get this aging veteran who can't really sort of play defense anymore, and you abandon your number six pick from the 2019 draft. It's when I was like, oh, you just keep missing on everything. And they gave Malik Beasley good money, and he sort of
He's such a tease. Like, when you see him playing healthy, he can make threes. He can score. He almost averaged 20 points a game. Like, he can really get out there and make it happen. He just doesn't stay healthy. He had a hamstring issue. Edwards, not everybody's high on him from a PER standpoint. They think he takes too many shots. I like it. I like Anthony Edwards.
Well, it was one of those like, well, why are you getting him number one? He couldn't even, that team with Georgia was under 500.
Super athletic, like, well, big threes, and nothing bothers him. Whether he's winning or losing, he's still going to play hard.
And then he showed why he deserves to be a starter, and that's what you want, progression from a number one pick. And yeah, you're going to make, there, any rookie is going to be terrible and make bad shots and make bad defensive because you're not used to the speed of the game. You're not used to these, you know, the professional aspect of it. Now, I guess everything sort of hinges on D'Angelo Russell. Like, how good is he?
Well, here's the other thing. Is D'Angelo Russell still a point guard? Because he's really good at that not an off ball too, like a guy waiting for the shot. That's not his thing. He can be the ball handler, but he really works at the two. The problem is you bring in Beverly, but Beverly is no longer a starting one. I don't think he's capable of handling that kind of a load. He is an upgrade, but he has to be an upgrade at him in the situation where he comes, he's plugged in, he plays defense, he riles up the team, and he makes a shot every now and then. As a starter, no, he would get blown up fast. So Beasley also, I think, is important for him to be able to play. The only other thing you could do is you could go big, and you can have Edwards at the two, and then play a little bit of like Jared Vanderbilt and Anthony Towns and maybe even Naz Reid at the four. But that's a really experimental lineup. I don't know if that would work.
And yes, that's the way the NBA is now. You have to run really weird lineups in order to work. And there is no real traditional lineup. But Minnesota's not really built for that because Towns has to be five.
Do you think Prince can play the three? Or do you think he's damaged goods?
Well, Prince is, I don't know why people think he's damaged goods.
His contract's overvalued when he signed the extension with Brooklyn.
Is that his fault? The same thing when Tyler Johnson, well, yeah, he's not a $25 million player. Yeah, but he's a scrappy player. It's not, nobody told him, hey, you know what? I'm only worth about $8 million, so please pay me $8 million.
Right.
So it's not his fault. Yeah, Prince, you can play small ball four, kind of, like really small. But with Minnesota, you know, McDaniels, Jake Layman, Josh Okogie, Jalen Newell, none of those guys are like, oh yeah, I totally need them in there, but
they're not earth movers. Yeah.
And there's lots of stretches where they're getting 30 minutes a game.
Oh yeah. Okogie plays a ton. He played 21 minutes. The craziest one I read was that Naz Reid, listen, LSU guy, I love Naz Reid. He played 19 minutes a game. I mean, that's a lot for a two-way player.
Naz, he earned, he's overachieved. It was just one of those, yeah, this is why one and done maybe isn't a good idea, because mm-hmm. he was one and done, right? Or is he a senior?
He was one and done. Yeah. 32
There's another one and done mistake.
32.5 is the over under in wins. That's actually way higher than last year. They were 23-49, like I said. They were, if they had finished it to 82 games, it would have been 26 wins. I mean, this is an,
and that's the thing is, like, you look at it on paper, like, you look at this roster.
Really, where are the extra 6 wins? Like, that's what I wonder.
And you're like, Towns should be a beast and should be like Anthony Davis, just destroying everybody. Russell should be, you know, back to his rookie year, you know,
the
Lakers.
The problem with Towns is baked in. He's so good offensively that he can't focus on defense. And it ruins the rest of the team because their defense was awful. 29th in points allowed, 26th in efficiency, dead last in 3-point percentage defense. Like, that's all really bad.
And that's every year. Think back to Jimmy Butler, where he just kept calling
they
everybody
had
out.
Freaking Thibodeau, and they still couldn't play defense.
And that's like, basically, it's like, okay, they're 32 wins, which I think that's too high. But you look at this roster, it's like, well, how are they not going to get 40? Because, well, they're the Timberwolves, and every year we expect them to be absolutely terrible. So they'll find a way to lose every game. But
that's a stretch. I'll go under on that one.
Yeah, I'll go under on this as well. But they have to make the playoffs this year, or you just have to blow up the team, right? Mm-hmm.
And it's now or never for a couple of those guys, like for Okogie and I don't want to pick on McDaniels. McDaniels is I think McDaniels just finished his rookie year. Who's another guy I'm thinking of? Well, I would have said Culver, but Culver got moved.
It's his rookie year. Okay, you know, Vanderbilt, Layman, Okogie, they're young players, but these young players should not be in the starting lineup because they're not good enough. And just, this is a very expensive team year in, year out to be bad.
Yeah, they were like what, at the lip of the tax?
Yeah,
like they were right there, like $130 million total. Like they're pretty much done. Last question, we'll finish up with Minnesota. A Ben Simmons trade, is it possible?
They're the only ones that possibly could. And you know, all the talk is, well, they don't want to include Russell. It's like, well, who can you include? They're not going to take garbage for him. It has to be focused. Well, I don't know if Russell can play with, I mean, not Russell, Ben Simmons can play with this team. Yeah, you want Ben Simmons in there for his defense. So
I don't want to say like Ben Simmons is the missing piece. It's not like, oh, wow, Minnesota is a contender. I would say if he comes in, he would fit and they would immediately improve. I'll say that.
Oh, they immediately improved.
Whereas for some other teams, if you add Ben Simmons, you're like, really? Like, you know, you kind of question it. But for Minnesota, I don't. I think they would be better if they had him. You got to give up something, of course. But
they would have to be. But they have their team is just filled with expensive complementary pieces, and you need really just more of that because you're just sort of, you know, we saw this Garnett. You just put garbage around Garnett, and then all of a sudden, you know, well, he, you know, as much as he wanted to stay, well, you can't keep him.
Okay. Moving on, we'll go back to the Eastern Conference, and we'll finish up the ground floor here. The lobby. I'll tell you, the lobby is comfortable, depending on what your level of comfort is.
It's not, if this is your lobby, these teams, like, okay, you're welcome to be in this ground.
Hey, it's got air conditioning, which I can't say for half of Southeast Louisiana right now. I'll take that. The Washington Wizards. This one's funny, and I'll just get the over-under out of the way. It's at 32.5, but that's a lot less than what they were getting ready to be around. They had 34 wins in the 72 game season. It would have been somewhere around 39 had it projected that way. So this is a whole lot less, but you and I are more optimistic about the long-term future of the Wizards, even though I think we would be in agreement that the under here is actually within reach.
This is the hardest team to peg, and I kept moving them back and forth and back and forth the entire time. Because it's hard to tell. Like, you look at this roster. Yes, they getting Wes Unseld as the new coach.
Wes Unseld Jr., yes.
Jr. as the new
senior,
coach.
Senior that is no longer with us.
Changes, and then that's why he's not coaching them.
Yes, when Wes Unseld Sr., 6 feet under, is coaching the Washington Wizards. He was great for him. He was great for Washington. But, hey, Junior's in. He came from Denver. And you were talking about how they finally got off of a big name.
You got, you know, but that's a downgrade because it's a complete unknown. And they really overachieved previously as that roster was just.
Oh, they overachieved with Russell Westbrook. They doubled down on Westbrook and said, especially with Scottie Brooks, who had coached him in Oklahoma City, and said, you know what, Russ? Bradley Beal is gonna probably win the scoring title. He didn't. Steph Curry did, but he got close. He said, look, we got Beal scoring his points. He's doing his thing. We don't have the guys behind Beal to pick us up. Can you just beast through the rest of the season and make something of it? And Westbrook did it. He boosted his value to the point that he wound up trading his seemingly untradeable contract because he's in supermax level for a guy in his, like, what, in his, like, late, is he 30 or is he right before
30? He's 30.
Yeah, like 30, and maybe he's seen his best days, can't play defense anymore, can't make threes, got traded to the Lakers, and they got a nice little return in that because it also involved other teams. So they got Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, KCP. Then they signed Spencer Dinwiddie in that sign-and-trade too, 3 years, $62 million, but Dinwiddie, despite the injury history, is a very good player.
For one, Westbrook is 32, so we're not going to even.
I didn't know that. He's maybe 30.
They got the problem with Washington was they were so top heavy with John Wall was you can't with him and Westbrook, you couldn't afford to get literally anybody. That's why Thomas Bryant, who was an undrafted free agent, I think he was just a two, you know, he was a 2 week pickup, and then they kept re-signing him and finally for the year, and he, you know, became a starter off minimum money, mm-hmm. and got injured his what at first or second game last year.
10 games in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But now they traded for a full roster, and it's like, well, I wanted to put this team in the basement, but then you look at it, it's like, well, Dinwiddie, as you mentioned, is good. He was the one who before he got injured.
ACL. That's the second one in his career. So that's hard to gauge. But yeah, continue.
You know, he was the one who was powering Brooklyn before, you know, as everybody else was out. You have Beal, who I'm going to say will be the scoring leader this year.
You think he'll lead the league in scoring this time? Okay.
Last year they tried to make their, you know, the big signing with Davis Bertans, who didn't do much last year. But now you got, like you mentioned, you have a backup roster. You have Kuzma. Solid starter. Not good, just solid.
Very good defensive player.
You know, Caldwell Pope, solid, give minutes. You have Harrell, who was just terrible at the Lakers, but he was good at, you know, he was a six man in the Clippers.
Here's my question, though, with the Wizards, with Harrell. He's more effective as a six man, as proven in with the Clippers. Not saying that you can put him in that same spot and it work just as well in Washington, but is there a situation where maybe you could play Gafford and Hachimura as the starters at the four and the five and have
you have to play Gafford at the five, start him at the five?
But even though start is what I'm saying.
He's terrible for a starter.
Good shot blocker though.
You have nobody else to there. Thomas Bryant still coming back from injury. You can't start him. Right. You drafted Isaiah Todd from the G League. He's your developmental project. You got Denny Avdija, who's coming back from an injury. He was, you know, misused in the previous lineup.
They bring in Kispert from the lottery. He's a good shooter.
Yeah, they're high on him. So you have, you know, you bring back Neto, who's just, you know, solid backup. Give me 15 minutes as a point guard. Mm-hmm. So you added players, which this team has never added around them. So you're giving you know, Beal complimentary parts as opposed to 10-day contract people. So I want to take the over on them at 32, but then again, I also want to take the under of them because it's so hard to be, because with a new coach, you don't know either A, they'll buy in, B, the system will fit, and especially with so many, the entire team is essentially new. Mm-hmm. You're not bringing back, you're bringing in two separate, you're merging two complete teams, kind of, and it'll take a while for them to get it. And the good thing is you have, you're in the East, so you can pound on the really terrible team. So, you know, I moved them up to the lobby here because they should make the, they should take a step back from last year, but they really overachieved.
Yeah. I think so, we're showing our hand being in the ground floor, because a 32 win team, despite the play in expansion, giving more opportunities to worser win loss teams, a 32 win team wouldn't be at that level. So I think a 32.5, I would probably go over on that one too. And the other reason is just the internal motivation. And this is the big question that I'll throw back to you, is that you've got to make Bradley Beal feel satisfied enough to get an extension wrapped up by the end of October. So like, we're at a point where it's nut cutting time for the Wizards of like, to talk to Bradley Beal and his agent and say, look, we've been dancing around this for the last year. There's no pen to paper. Will you stay here? We can give you Supermax. Beal has been hesitant. And if it's a no, then it might be reasonable that they could go under, because they would be like, they would sort of devolve into like a 50 loss team with some projects. And then they would trade Beal for probably a king's ransom. Like, which scenario do you think is more likely to happen?
It could technically go either way, which is why, again, hard.
That's not a good answer. This is a podcast where we answer questions.
I think he will stick out the year, because there, you would imagine that he had input on getting unselled.
But Tommy Shepard's not going to be happy if Beal comes to the table at the end of October and says, you know what, I still want to wait it out and see what this team looks like by the end of the season.
Yeah, then it's called trade deadline. We can get a massive haul for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because every team
don't
will
even
be
start
like,
with that. Yeah, they would.
Every team would be like,
multiple
what do you
draft
want?
Picks and an all-star and a complimentary player.
Probably. I wouldn't even say that. I would just be like, all right, who do you, you know, you want Towns straight up? You want, you know, we'll give, you know, we have Brogdon and LeVert. We could have them both for him. Like, their teams, like, just.
Well, they're all stuck in that. Well, if you're stuck in the ground floor or in the lobby, I mean, you're waiting for your room. You're just kind of chit-chatting, you know? That's what happened. That's what happened. Remember when they had the All-Star game in New Orleans? The rumor was that Dell Demps, who was the Pels GM, and Vlade Divac, who is the Kings GM, they basically were on the same floor or something, and they basically just got to talking, and they talked themselves into the DeMarcus Cousins trade. That's how it happened. They basically got, like, Stockholm Syndrome, being stuck in the same room for the longest.
Yep. And so now, ending the episode, and we'll end every episode each way, which team has the most potential to move out of this group, whether it be go down to the basement or moving up?
Oh, Memphis. As a potential move up, yes. Like, I actually think that they're well ahead of whatever their projection was. Let me look at it again. 40.5, yeah. I think they'll be okay there. If Morant takes that real big jump, like that year three jump, oh, man. Like, that's when they could get really good, especially if Jaren Jackson Jr. starts to show what he can do. It really depends to me on what happens with his rumored extension. Will they negotiate one before the season starts? And if he doesn't, will he be motivated to play hard, because he's going to be in that John Collins situation where you're going into your restricted free agency and you're good, but they don't want to commit to you yet. So you play really, really hard and you show your value so that you can get that big money. If those two things happen together, the ascension of Morant, I guess you could call it ascension of Triple J. Now you got a good team. So that one is fine. Washington, I think, is just being lowballed, in my opinion, especially if Beal stays.
Okay. And not Memphis. I mean, not Memphis. Minnesota is just standing in the elevator with the basement button lit.
I hate to say this, because a few years ago they made the Wiggins deal, which was a big deal. They got to make another one. Like, you can't do it through signings. You know, we talked about this. They got to do it through trades. And they did a few of them in the offseason, but they were bunts. Those were not home runs. They got to hit a home run in the trade market.